from a good meeting so far. We're on the chapter 7, verse 14. We had that last time, which is really question number 6. What's the overshadowing issue? Chapter 7.
The time of distress.
Time of distress. Time has been shortened. There's something going on. Whatever it is, Paul, that's kind of a backdrop here. Now,
in view of the distress, he's concerning the things of marriage.
Yes. We'll see that in these verses, and it may not apply that much to us today, these particular things, but outside situations and circumstances can affect, you know, our daily lives, don't they? And a lot of things we don't have control over. You know, you got control of a famine. You got control, you know, of a war. You got control of a Great Depression. So you got control of a power outage in the whole country. You know, sometimes we think in our lives we've lost control. Hope that doesn't last too long. So if some of those things can happen, that can affect here. In this case, the questions that they had concerning marriage and that relationship of marriage, which involves the body. And as we look at these, let's consider that, because there's a lot of different relationships going on here in this chapter. And a lot of good questions. A lot of good questions. Slaves or not slaves. Married or unmarried. Widows or not. Virgins or not. On and on and on. So a lot of good questions concerning that, because marriage was an important thing in these days. I was reading some parts about it that there weren't that many single people, let's say. Because marriage is one of the things you did. Not all women were sellers of purple and maybe independent. Women had a position and they had to be supportive, okay? The idea of, well, because they just weren't out there in that workplace, right? Okay? Matter of fact, that's kind of a new sort of thing. So marriage was important to propagate. It was important to a status. It was important to eat. Okay, it's important to fulfill sexual desires, okay, which is a lot of this. So this is an important chapter, I think, okay, to them, not just a minor point. Now, we briefly was talking about question 6. And question 6, who was it written to?
To the rest.
The rest, okay? The rest. And that was mixed marriages, Christians and non-Christians. And the basic message in this whole 12 through 16 group here was to stay married, wasn't it, if you're in that position? Because even if you say, I'm going to separate from someone, well, which is the better situation? It's for the personal person to decide. But in Paul's view, at this point in time, the separation is probably a worse situation for you spiritually, for your eternity, than it would be if you stayed married. Okay, so the always thing is stay in that relationship. I think it's his overall message. Now, in 14, let's look at that real quick. Let me get back there. And these are dealing with people, 13 starts there, and a woman who has an unbelieving husband, he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. So we got a mixed marriage here, don't we? Unbelieving and believing. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. And I mentioned last time the key to that verse is the idea children are unclean. And you might think the word sanctified there too of being clean and unclean. There was the idea that if a marriage is clean or unclean, that if one of them is clean, then if they stay married to an unclean, that's against God's will. And that's the problem they were having with mixed marriages, in their mind, having marriage or questions about that. And now it extends even beyond this, that, wow, if we have an unclean marriage, then our children are unclean. See? And that's what he's dealing with here. He says, listen, you know, yet in 15, if the unbelieving one wants to leave, let him leave. Brothers, this is not under bondage, you know, in such cases. But God has called us to peace. Or how do you know a wife whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know a husband whether you will save your wife? That's the end of that section.
Can you
break
down this children are unclean a little bit more for me?
Yes.
With given Timothy's situation and how fond Paul was to Timothy, and that Timothy had an unbelieving father.
Yes.
And a believing mother and a believing grandmother. I don't know that I've ever heard him referenced as being unclean.
No. No.
So.
That his parents. I don't know if his father was idolatrous or not. Could have been. Might have been. But the question here is whether they are unclean. And their question here in Corinth is whether they're unclean. I don't know. Well, they knew Timothy. They knew the circumcision.
Don't you think it maybe has something to do with the Jews? You know, he has to deal with circumcision and uncircumcision just right after this. The Jews, back under the law, there were clean and unclean. And they even had to separate themselves if they were unclean for so long and then go to the priest and, you know, be declared clean. And any time that they were unclean, they were impure before God. And so going back to that mindset, do you not think that Paul's addressing, you know, now, even though one is a believer, one is not a believer, that in under God's law of marriage, they are pure. And the children born to that marriage are pure and not unclean. You know, to me, you know, that sutter helps to see the situation.
Yeah, apparently it wasn't that way even with his case. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're not unclean. Mm-hmm. And the question was, really goes to 15 there, that this idea of leaving, do you leave such a person? Mm-hmm. Do you leave such a person? Because I want to be right with God. And that's the overwhelming principle anyway, all right? I want to be right with God in whatever situation I'm in. Even if it deals with not being in a certain relationship. And they're not under bondage. That bondage there is probably the idea of duty and that sort of thing. But that God has called us to peace. That's a key part too. If I'm thinking that I'm in a relationship that causes turmoil and strife, and if I separate, it's going to be hard feelings and this and that. Who knows what happens? Tearing the kid one parent to another. Who knows what it is? Let's keep it peaceful. Keep it peaceful and stay in that relationship. Unless they leave. Unless they leave. And that's somewhat, I guess, today. Is it, do you stay in a relationship or do you separate in a relationship that's the strife and hurt? And all that sort of thing, which happens in divorce all the time, doesn't it? Or do you, what can I say, tough it out? Because God knows what you're going through emotionally. But as long as you don't do things contrary to the will of God, that's like in a mixed relationship. Do you attend church here? Even though the husband may be at home or not. Or vice versa. Do you? Are you setting an example you should? That's an example. But are you setting things that are pleasing to God? Are you encouraging other people? So See? And again, back then there was a great dependence. Women couldn't be as independent as they could today. Really hard on the woman. And I don't know where the children, if you had a separation, I don't know where the children went. Or they went with the husband or the ex-wife. I don't know. Maybe y'all can think about that. I'll do some research too. And I would imagine children probably went with the husband, probably. But I'm guessing. So it's a hard situation. He's trying to deal with it here. Now, in 16, you know, how are you going to, will you save your husband or not, or won't you save? You know, that's up in God's hands. You know, you do what you can to deal with strife and that sort of thing, but you need peace to be part of it. And look at people from the outside. You're separating. If you become a Christian, in Corinth, what do you do with an unbelieving husband? Well, they say down there, you got to separate the marriage. Well, that's, I don't know if we're part of that group or not. Interesting, isn't it? See, vice versa. So that really was a strife issue.
Yeah. You know, Ezra dealt with the Jews and foreign women and children. And so when they had to send them away, you know, this could be in the back of the mind of some of the Jews that are there.
Yeah.
They had to send the wives and children away that were born to the family, who were married unbelievers. This is a different family of God. This is a different holy nation than what Israel was. And, you know, Paul has to deal with it all the time.
And kind of think here that maybe this believing, unbelieving might have been, you know, the unbeliever might have been a Jew instead of idolator. Well, is that old thing just what Linda was saying. Uh-oh, now I'm married to a Gentile in the Jew's mind. See? Whoa, what am I going to do with this situation? So it's a hard thing. Paul's trying to clarify for him. And this also sees here too that there's concern on the part of the believers to do what's right. Now, we've talked about faith is misplaced a lot in this class and on and on and on. And you would think, you know, they're all on the verge of leaving Christ and doing what they want to do and having their own gospel and all this sort of thing. But there's people here with honest questions dealing with those everyday relationships. And that's what this chapter is about. And now again, go down to children. Let's see. 17 through 24 are written to what group of people? There's a mix in this group. There's a lot of people in this group. And when you deal with this, you got the circumcised and uncircumcised. Well, that's not the Gentiles, sort of. Or it's the Gentiles and the Jews. And 18, was any man called already circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Anyone been called in uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. But what matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. So those relationships you're in, whether it's circumcision or uncircumcision, is nothing. Okay, it's important to the individual, but in the eyes of God, it's nothing. Now, that's an interesting point. We'll look at that next time, in the next chapter, on personal liberties. But what matters is keeping the commandments of God. And there's an interesting point in 20, that each man remain in that condition, what he was called, which is what we've been saying over and over, isn't it? Now, and 21, were you called while a slave? Do not worry about it, for if you are able, also become free, rather do that. You know, then 22, idea of slave again, for he who was called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who was called while free is Christ's slave. That deals with the relationship part, that bondage and that sort of thing. Bondage, a voluntary bondage, of course, in Christ's point. And then the bought with a price, slaves of men. A slave. Slave was, again, what we say? This town is probably, was it, what did I say, 200,000 or 300,000 freed persons. and maybe 500,000 slaves. This is a lot of slaves. And there's no condemnation of slaves here. But the idea that a slave can also be a Christian, can't they? And so, what do I do with that relationship that I want to be under bondage to Christ, but I'm under bondage slave, and that's not right? What do I do? Do I stay a slave or not? Yes. But, you know, if your master wants to let you out of it, that's good too. That's good too. But don't fight that relationship you're in. Don't leave your master. Because then what have you called? You caused, again, a problem. A real problem. Because again, if the religion of Christianity, a tenet of that is to leave your master. Well, what are masters going to do then? They're not going to allow them to hear Paul, are they? Can you imagine? Because that's an investment and the workforce and all that sort of thing. Probably their livelihood of the master if they use them for labor. Not to mention getting things built around the city. So it's another one of those things to stay in that relationship in which you're in, unless you be free. Now, and you can see how that was on their minds. What do you do? And again, the overriding idea is, I want to follow the commandments of God. I want to do what's right in God's eyes, even if it takes leaving a master. See? And that's the questions they had concerning that. And Paul's giving good advice. Now, and again, he mentions here about the obligations to Christ and the idea of authority, and that you're a slave of Christ and you were bought with a price. What price was that? Sure, the sacrifice and life of Christ. Okay? Now, 24, okay, 25 through 38. Now 25, he's talking to who?
Virgins.
Okay. I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trusted. By the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I'll come back to that. I think then that this is good in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. For you bound to wife, do not seek to be released. For you released from wife, do not seek a wife. Okay. But if you should marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. If such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. Again, the idea of bringing to their mind this distress or tribulation and that sort of thing. I mentioned famine and that sort of thing, but I think it's all revolving around persecution. It's coming, and we've already seen some of it. Well, the emperor run them all out of Rome. Because they were causing riots and strife, and the Jews were causing that trouble. Now, but then he goes in to 7:29. Time has been shortened, which we've already went over that. And you may have to deal in your life. There are situations that you're in, but. You may have to live as if you're not in those situations because you just can't keep up with them because time has been shortened. Now, 32 is interesting. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. Okay. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. 34, and his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and is virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. Body again. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. It tells us something about marriage, doesn't it? That you don't live independently of the other person, do you? It tells us that relationship is one of recognition of the other and that bond that you both have and recognition of support and care for one another. And that's not a small matter. Because he's even saying here that that can so distract you so much that your situation and your relationship to God can be affected.
Your priorities.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And life is a compromise, isn't it? A lot of times. And he's just saying here that in this situation and in every day, even today with us, that the idea of marriage can overwhelm you, and can it change your faith? It can alter it, right? You see, that's right. And that's the things that the apostles are bringing back to their mind. Remember that these situations that you get into can change your priorities, can limit what you want to do. It takes time, too, doesn't it, to deal in a marriage? Because we all got 24 hours. They had the same thing back then. And it's time to concentrate on things that are right with God. We need to think about that. And so he just reminded them of that sort of thing, and these things of the world. And even the unmarried there had things right, that they could maintain the things of the Lord in their body and spirit of the total person. 35, and this I say for your benefit, not to put restraint upon you, but to promote what is seemly, and to discourage undistracted devotion to the Lord. Same idea as what we just said. Devotion to the Lord.
Doug, I know that you're putting an inference on like the negative side
of
it changing you. But going back to the verses that are talking about the married believers and the unbelievers, the best preparation you can make is to figure that out before you get married. Is that person a believer already? Is it a potential that they can become a believer? I mean, because if it wasn't for Jeff having the potential in me, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't have married me. So it can help you in the positive way, too.
Yeah, by looking at your life as a single person, unmarried person, it's projected to people you see, okay, and internally you feel comfortable with God, then that has an influence, okay? On who you choose, okay, because the women choose, don't they? Yeah, they do.
Well, and the same with priorities.
Yeah.
If you're both a Christian, your priorities are going to be the same.
Yes, yes. And that.
It should be.
Yeah.
But even in that, under the duress, everything, as I understand it, is in view of the distress. And the time is shortened because it's going to be so bad and it's coming, that even with two Christians, two believers, it's going to be a hard time. And if your faith is going to be tried. And when they come up to put the axe to you or whatever, you know, where's your devotion going to lie? Are you going to deny Christ for that life? Or are you going to, you know, save your life? Are the wife going to be, you know, compromised because of her husband? It's because, in my view, the distress that's coming, you know, you'd be free from that, so you'd just be totally devoted and not distracted.
And the real distraction, you could talk husband and wife when you throw children into the mix. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes all over the place, all right? You're talking about emotional things, especially if you're close to, if you loved your children to start with. All right? What age is that?
Like
all right?
Yeah, there's some ages you don't like.
No. It's not the young ages, it's the older ages, let me tell you. All right?
Because normally in verse 39, when he says those who have wives should be as though as they don't have any, that's not given license for men to ignore their wives and to be totally unloving and not sanctify them and not treat them like Ephesians says to treat
them.
That's
right, that's right. So, and then, let's see, devotion to the Lord in 36. If any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin daughter. Interesting, huh? So you can kind of see a relationship with fathers, daughter and children, that sort of thing. Back to children again. What do you do? And the point is, if she should be a full age, I would think that's kind of, she's getting older. I'm not going to say spinster, okay? But I'm going to say getting older. And what do you do? Okay? Let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let her marry. But he who stands firm in his heart, being under no constraint, but has authority over his own will, he has decided his own to keep his own virgin. He will do well. So then he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well. He who does not give her in marriage will do better under the present distress. Okay. So that question came up. All good questions. All good questions. Well, does that apply to the virgin son too? Well, it said virgin daughter, we'll just leave it there. Now, we've talked about under this distress. And the next question coming up is 12. Sometimes in verse 25 and 40, the opinion question comes up in people who are trying to determine authority. And in these two instances, let's look at 25 and 40. If I say it's Paul's opinion, what does that kind of first thing hit your mind?
From him, not from God.
Yeah, it's not from God. This is just something off the cuff here. You know, I've kind of learned this from personal experience, you know. In my life, this is what happened to me, and I was growing up, or I saw this, or, you know, take this for what it's worth, right, sort of thing. But we need to remember, and I'll show those 25 and 40, that while Jesus was here, he talked about certain things. But did he talk about a father has a virgin daughter, and what do you do? See, in marriage, there's a lot of things he didn't say, but that's why the apostles and the prophets are there in there. See, to deal with those issues. Well, let's see, singing in the assembly. Where's that? See, so there's a lot of things that Jesus and knew ahead of time with the wisdom of God that questions would come up. And that's what these inspired men, okay, inspired people did. Further answered those questions, honest questions, dealing with devotion to the Lord. Okay, in everyday life, which concern their eternity. So, in 25 and 40, where those questions come up, and if I said those opinions, then what can I say? Well, where else is his opinion? And all of a sudden, you're down that authority trail, and who knows what will happen. All right, you can let your imagination run wild. Error will then come in, won't it? Okay, if you say that what he wrote is not that. And you'll see that Paul is always dealing with that question. In 14:34, it goes to that. Now, in 25, let's see. Not concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as to one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I take that to mean that his opinion there, okay, by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. So what the Lord has delivered to him. This is trustworthy what I'm saying to you. Not by my authority, because I flipped in the word Lord here, didn't I? And Lord, he could use the word Savior, but that doesn't fit the situation, does it? He used the word Lord. Is the idea of kingship, authority, guidance, say, versus Savior, salvation, that sort of thing, individual. So he's dealing there. And then in 40, but in my opinion, she is happier she remains as she is, and I think that I also have the Spirit of the God. Well, wait a minute now. I think I have the Spirit? If we deal with the 2 Corinthian letter, that's what he's defended, his whole apostleship, because they're questioning that. He saw the Lord. He talked to Jesus. And it's been his whole point. And he's doing a little understatement here is what he's doing. Because remember, what was the Corinthians? Questioning his apostleship. We don't even need you. We're beyond you. Some of them were. So, that's the point in 40, I think. I think I also have the Spirit of God. Okay? So, in both of those instances where you deal with the opinion question, he's really coming back in the same verses and dealing that he does have the authority. That the Spirit expresses and tells him the thoughts and mind of God through his writing. Okay? And that his advice, if I could say, is sound. Sound footing. Alright? So I just want to deal with that question. Sometimes I can come up. Now, 14. Well, Linda, you've heard this one. And a wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my opinion, she is happy she remains she is, and I think that I have also the Spirit of God. Only in the Lord. What does that? There are good people. Hear me now. There's good people on both sides of that. In those four words. What is one view?
They're Christians.
Okay, the people you marry are got to be, right? Commanded to be. Because I have the Spirit of God. Must be Christian. And the other view?
According to the Lord's teaching, if it's right. If it's along the guidelines for marriage.
You know, that's right, which is what we've been which is what we've been dealing with in this whole chapter. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, what kind of person are we talking about? Well, I thought, didn't we deal with this widow question earlier? 8 and 9? Verses 8 and 9? Well, what's going on then?
See, I didn't take it that way.
See? In 8 and 9, he dealt with the question of widow and unmarried. But there he dealt with the idea of having urges within you that you got to fulfill. And if you got to get married, got to get married under this present distress. But he comes back to it again in 39 and 40. And it says here, free to be married to whom she wishes. Well, what does that mean? That don't sound restrictive to me, does it? Unless you say it's a qualifier only in the Lord.
See, I didn't understand it that way. I took it as... and I may have taken it completely wrong. But, you know, as far as wife bound to husband, as long as he lives, whether they're still married or whether they're divorced for unscriptural reasons, she is still bound to him. As long as he lives. Mm-hmm. But if he is dead, then she's free to remarry.
She's no longer bound to him.
She's no longer bound to him. And she's free to marry whoever she wishes. Only in the Lord's eyes. Not in civil law. That's kind of how I took it. Because civil law says divorce for what you want and then you can remarry. But in God's eyes, that's not how he views it, and how he has instructed us.
So the question here is not the who to marry, it's the process of marriage. And we've seen over and over in these verses that whether it's verse 10, verse 12, verse 17, I got these, okay? Like verse 10, he's reentering his apostleship. I have the words of Christ. I'm led by the Spirit of God. Same thing in verse 12. Verse 17, he directs in all the churches. Well, what gives him the authority to direct his opinions in all the churches? He's an apostle. And we saw in 19, keeping the commandments of God is what he stressed. And we just saw in verse 25, by the mercy of God, he said these things. The grace of God. privilege of God, that he knows these things to relate to them. 32, things of the Lord please the Lord. And 34, the things of the Lord. 35, devotion to the Lord, which he talked about. And 40, I have the Spirit of the God. So, only in the Lord, is not the who, it's the frame of mind, it's the situation you're in, it's the process of who you choose. That's a who. But the process of, under certain situations, you need to marry or not marry, or stay married, or not stay married. And we see the putting away part. Did the person put them away? Or were they obstruction to that? If someone wants to leave, let them leave. Because you don't want to cause strife one to another. Now, so the idea of only in the Lord, because she can marry who she wishes. And again, we saw 8 and 9, the idea of sexual desires overwhelming the merit of the one who is with her. Now, yes, I want to call it. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I didn't know if I was...
Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't want to interrupt your thought there. Just, and one thing back on like your question 4 and 5, the way I kind of stated it on mine, I mean, yes, it was talking about the unmarried and the widows, but something that this verse 39 is addressing, as you already said.
Yeah.
I kind of thought of it as, or I titled it, those that are not bound. And then on the verse or question 5, when it's talking about the married or the bound, because you do have things that qualify what he means by married and unmarried and such stuff like that. And also on 6 and 7, although it's talking a little different about things, but then I consider that like the verses 12 through 15 is where it was talking about the mix. So you have the unbelievers and the believers, and the question 7, although there was many different types of relationships or duties or what in there, generally it was those that were called or the believers. So that might be helpful in some of that when we get to verse 39.
Let me say one other point too about staying the condition in which you were. Throughout history, there's been some abuse of that. If I'm in an adulterous situation, stay in the condition which you're in.
39 says no.
If I'm selling idols, and this is actual case, if I'm selling from ancient writing I was reading, okay? If I'm selling idols, I'm making and selling them, stay in the condition which you're in.
That's what people in the world think.
Yeah. Well, is that what he's talking about? I mean, I just read all in devotion to the Lord and all this sort of thing, okay? So there could be some abuse of the principle, okay, of this. So keep that in mind. I'll try to make that a little practical. So it's just a question that they had which bothered them, this chapter. And let's consider that, I guess, in daily life. Now, I want to real quick, I don't know how much time we got left, all right? Real quick, I want you to go to chapter 8 on your verses. And we're going to write the word Paul and them. Who's the them, I would think? Those Corinthians, right? If you want to put Corinthians, that's fine. If you look, I want you to write in the first verse, we know. Now it's turn to things like, right above the word we know, write them. And in that same verse, right above the word, well, the second knowledge makes area, write Paul above that.
Where? Why?
Because we're getting to see dialogue. Okay. We're saying, you say this, but I say this.
Oh, okay.
See the idea? This is your view on things, them, the Corinthians, but I, Paul, have this view on it. We do that, don't we, in life? Okay? So it's called dialogue. And if you want to see more of that, Romans 3, 1 through 9. Romans 3, 1 through 9, if you want to see dialogue. But it's a technique in dealing with issues. You kind of like you say, but I say. Same idea. All right. In verse 2, above the word anyone, put Paul. Verse 3, put Paul. But in 8:4, put them. 8:5, put them.
Them where on verse
4? Oh, just the whole verse. The whole verse.
Oh.
Okay.
Why them? We know that there's no such thing as an idol.
Well, we're not saying that they're wrong. But this is just them talking. Okay? Just because I put them doesn't mean it's an error. All right? And you'll see that here as we deal. 8:5, them, the whole verse. 8:6 is them, the whole verse. Now 8:7 is Paul, the whole verse. See the word however? See the little keys in there. Verse 8, it is them. And verse 9 is Paul. I just want to get that out before I lose time. So it's an interesting way to say that here's how Paul's saying, here's how you were thinking. And it's perfectly right in most cases. But yes, I know that, but see, consider this. So as you're looking at those, kind of think of it that way. All right? And again, Romans 3, 1 through 9 is a good example of that. Now, as we start chapter 8 and 9 and 10, and through your reading, what's 8 dealing with? Anybody?
Idol worship.
Idol worship meats. Mm-hmm. Okay? And what in the world do we do? Okay, we had some ceremonies out here with the idols. And remember the idolatrous town, Corinth? And we all get hungry. And in idol worship, a lot of the meat is not used in the ceremony. A lot of it is left over. So I'm going to call them priests, okay, in those situations. The meat is, sure, the priest gets some, but then there's still more left over, so it goes out in the marketplace. And we've got meat here that was sacrificed to idols in that sacred ceremony, quote unquote. And do we consume that meat? Do I serve that meat? It once was sacred. Is it still sacred? Okay. Does it matter to God? And what you're going to see in this chapter, there were some weaker believers, I'm going to call them weaker, quote unquote, that because they came from idolatry and they understood that. And when they said, well, I don't know if I should do that. I don't know if that's approved of God. I just worry about that. Okay, I got some doubt. Conscience? See, from their experience in life. And there's another group here who understand that it doesn't mean anything. It's just meat. But they're basically eating the meat when it's served, knowing that it's sacrificed, that it was sacrificed to idols. Because you know, God didn't make a difference to God. So we got one group here that's got knowledge. That's why I mentioned how many times is knowledge known. Knowledge has come up in the past, or wisdom has come up in the past, hasn't it? See, a lot. So they've got this knowledge that it was, no, God didn't view it one way or another. Just meat. All right? Just go ahead. But because of their eating it and saying, yeah, go ahead, you weaker believer. You have that kind of history. Just say, you go ahead and eat that. So the young one said, man, this hurts my conscience. It's going against my conscience. It's bothering me. And that's what he's dealing with in this chapter. And because of their arrogance, the ones who knew that, it's wrong to affect their conscience that way. It is a sin against Christ. Sin, not just an opinion. Conscience is very, very... You might look at the word conscience next time and think about it some more. Okay, those two verses deal with it. Okay? Thank you all very, very much.